Welcome to Public Policy This Week, a well-rounded weekly discussion of policy issues that frame today's American experience.
Good morning. It is Friday, August 19th, and you've joined us for Public Policy This Week here on KYMN Radio.
This weekly show focuses on policy, not politics. We take deep analytical dives into important public policy issues.
Our weekly guests are experts in a policy area, and we tap into their knowledge to learn about their policy challenges and opportunities.
Challenges and opportunities based on data derived from research, with policy options that naturally emerge from the research.
And we've built a bullpen of hosts who represent the political spectrum from the center-right to the center-left.
You'll hear our hosts stay away from politics and remain focused on the policies and the policy opportunities we should consider in dealing with the shared challenges we face as Minnesotans and as Americans.
For this week's show, your hosts are myself, Rich Larson. I'm the news director here at KYMN Radio. And the man across from me is John Olson, a former Navy intelligence officer who spent time at the American Embassy in Helsinki. He is an author, an adjunct professor at Carleton College, and the host of a show on KYMN Radio we call National Security This Week. John, I am very excited about today's show. I'm really excited about today's show. We have with us today a globally recognized expert on education policy.
Dr. Pasi Sahlberg is joining us via Zoom from his home country of Finland. Dr. Sahlberg is a Finnish educator and author. He has worked as a school teacher, a teacher educator, an academic, and as a policymaker in Finland while serving as the Director General of the Finnish Education System.
Dr. Sahlberg has also advised schools and education system leaders around the world. He has served as a senior education specialist at the World Bank in Washington, D.C., the lead education specialist at the European Training Foundation in Torino, Italy, Director General at Finland's Ministry of Education and Culture, and visiting professor of practice at Harvard University.
A recipient of numerous awards, Dr. Sahlberg's 2013 book, Finnish Lessons, What Can the World Learn from Educational Change in Finland, won the Grawemeyer Award here in the United States for, and I emphasize this, an idea that has the potential to change the world.
He has also published three new books in the past 2 years, and we'll ask him about those three books later in the show. He's currently professor of education at Southern Cross University in Lismore, New South Wales, Australia. Dr. Sahlberg lives in Lennoxhead, New South Wales, with his wife and his two sons.
Dr. Pasi Sahlberg, welcome to this week's edition of Public Policy This Week. We are truly honored that you could join us today. And Pasi, we have a lot I want to cover, so I want to jump right into it. We asked you to join us to talk about Finland's experience in fundamentally reforming your education system. Let's go back 50 years. You and I had some exchanges over email before we set up for this show, and it's been 50 years since Finland really reformed the system. Could you please tell us how Finland's education system worked 50 years ago? And if you could maybe discuss Finland's economic situation, where your country stood on the global index, the economic index, the major industries that were in Finland, that sort of thing. Maybe you could just sort of paint us a mental picture of what Finland was like and the education system was like 50 years ago.
Yeah, thank you very much, both for having me in your show. It's a true honor to be your guest and speak to you from beautiful Helsinki, Finland. And hello to all the Minnesota Finns if they are listening to this program. And thanks for the topic of education that is important not only for the Finns and our history, but also there in Minnesota. I've been there a number of times in your beautiful state of 10,000 lakes. As you know, the Finland is a country of 100,000 lakes, so you have a little bit to catch up, but we're getting there. So, yeah, indeed, actually, this month is almost exactly 50 years ago today when Finland started to do away the old school system. The education has been here, of course, since the mid-19th century, but we had all the way until 50 years ago, we had an education system that was inspired by a German model. And it was it basically divided children into two different educational tracks after fourth grade. So about the age of 10, like I went through the system or the post system or that system after the age of 10, kids were selected entirely based on their academic abilities to kind of an academic longer educational pathway. And then those who didn't be able to pass the test or for some other reasons that they normally had a much shorter educational path. So that was a kind of a thing where we started to realize already, you know, after the war, that this system is not going to be good enough for the country of 4.5 million people that time. That there's a lot of talent loss. We are losing a lot of kids who could contribute to the society mm-hmm. and economy and other things much more. There was clearly a huge inequality issue in this old system because of the fact that, you know, it divided kids at that young age. But then, you know, interestingly, we were also kind of having a sense of, you know, lagging behind the West. And that was particularly important that time because, you know, the post-war development after the Second World War in Finland, economic and social development had been really rapid and fast. But then we joined the OECD in 1969. That was a very important, one of those important economic milestones in our history. And the first OECD economic survey of Finland, this is what the membership brought to Finland, that was published in 1969, noted, and I quote here, it says that the heavy weight of agriculture, both in terms of output and employment, is still an important feature of the Finnish economy. That was since 1969. So agriculture still that time employed about a quarter of the Finnish workforce. The industry accounted for about one third of the Finnish workforce. So this was industry was dominated by wood and, you know, forestry and pulp and paper sectors, and also metal industries and shipbuilding and transport and electronics. Now, you know, Finland's income per capita that time, when we started to, in 1972, when we started to build this new system of education, was almost 30% lower than in Sweden. So we're clearly behind our Western neighbors. And that's why, you know, there was a strong understanding in the country in the late 1960s and, you know, 50 years ago in the building this new system, that a small country without significant natural resources can only be successful if it's investing in smartly and cleverly in its human resources. And that's why the dream was to have a secondary education for all possible. That was not possible that time in the 1960s, opening higher education for everyone who wants to study in higher education and make sure that education continues to be a public service, the kind of a human right that everybody had a right to education. So that was a kind of a picture 50 years ago when we started to kind of dream about this new system. I often say that, you know, in the United States, you probably remember this well. It's often used as an example what the JFK in early 1960s when inspiring American people to, you know, go send man to the moon and back by the end of the decade. We had a similar dream here in Finland, the kind of a Kennedy's type of dream, to have a good public school for each and every child in every village and everywhere in Finland, regardless of, you know, where the kids are. And that was a same type of kind of a moonshot idea that the Americans had in the technology and space exploration, but we had a similar reactions here also, that, you know, you cannot do that, no country has been able to do this yet, but we still dreamed about it and started to work 50 years ago for that dream.
Well, you've just been discussing this, Dr. Solberg, but tell us what was the catalyst for the government and the people of Finland to really decide to just completely overhaul the education system in Finland?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, the basic understanding was that, you know, what we had in the early 1970s was clearly not enough given the dreams and aspirations that we had. Remember that we had just joined the OECD, and OECD had the OECD is a club of the wealthy, advanced economies in the world. So we were there in a kind of a new, the youngest member of the OECD. And so we were a small nation that had big dreams. Finland has always been dreaming big things. And so we understood that, you know, you cannot accomplish, fulfill your big dreams unless you have a better education. So we needed to do that. So we also acknowledge that we are a small nation between the much bigger and powerful neighbors. The East, that time, the Soviet Union, and the West, the entire OECD, and the Western Europe. And that was also, it's a very important driver for this Finnish education transformation, this understanding that, you know, being squeezed between these two powers in the East and the West, that if we want to survive, we need to have good education. That's the only way. We can never beat our neighbors using the military power or even economic power, anything like this. We need to have education that will help us to survive. And then finally, I think the important thing is that is often ignored is that, you know, nobody speaks Finnish. There may be some people in Minnesota that understands Finnish, but, you know, Finnish people, you know, before they go to school, they understand that, you know, if I want to get by anywhere outside of this country, I need to learn another language, and not just one, because we also need to learn Swedish. By the constitution. So we need to have, you know, education is the best way to make sure that everybody, every Finn is a multilingual, so that they're able to do that. Just look at the ice hockey players they're playing there in Minnesota. They are all, you know, of course, Mikko Koivu and other guys. You know, they can speak a number of languages, and they could not do this thing without, you know, be able to have a good education. So, you know, this size, this smallness of the country, that we are small. In many ways, and much smaller than, you know, most other places, is driving this thing that, you know, if we want to be small but still have a kind of a significant role and impact, we need to have. We can only do that by having education that is able to get the best out of, you know, each and every one of us, and that has been this notion of smallness and our role, realistically, has been the most important driver for this turnaround.
So, Dr. Sahlberg, it sounds like the Finnish political leadership, the people of Finland, sort of had an epiphany about what you needed to do to fundamentally reform your education system. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the stakeholders who were both for and against the sort of a radical change in your system, which I want to hear about in a little bit. But that'll help our listeners to understand what a monumental undertaking it was for reform in Finland 50 years ago today, or from about around now.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a big question, and it's probably difficult to explain in a detail that everybody would understand. But you know, this abolishing this parallel system that I mentioned earlier, that we wanted to do away this dual track, dividing, you know, kids in a two different educational pathways at the age of 10, and replace that with a comprehensive school that would keep each and every child not only in the same school, but also in the socially mixed classrooms. This was a difficult thing for many people to accept. You know, there were a lot of people in the 1960s in politics, but also outside of politics, in the business and industry, who basically say that you cannot do that, that you cannot kind of assume that all kinds of kids would be able to be educated well enough in the same classrooms. And so you know, some of those stakeholders that really were resisting this kind of a faith that you cannot educate all kinds of kids in the same school and classroom where the teachers, and that was a very important driver of this positive movement, is that most of the Finnish teachers, not all of them, but most of them, kind of had a very optimistic view about how we can educate everyone, and so most of the teachers and all the teacher organizations were kind of pushing this idea that yes, we can, you know, we can have a school, we can have a school system even where all the children can learn foreign languages and mathematics and reading and other things. So this teacher pressure and kind of that the teachers were convincing parents and others and the kids as well in the communities was such an important thing. But this was also politically very hot topic. So if anybody there thinks that, you know, Finns have been just able to decide the things and then move on and no debates and noise, that's not so. You know, this was a hugely controversial, this whole issue of building this comprehensive school that was based on equity or equality and, you know, the kind of assumption and belief that we can educate everyone. So there was a political right that was really resisting this idea. We had a number of private schools before the 1972, and many of these private school private foundations actually that were running off, and they were parents, they were resisting this idea that no, that we need to have a kind of a system that is educating the so-called elites and providing a world-class education for some students, and then, you know, some type of education for those who are not you know, able to believe in this elite. So that's the other side of this thing. And you know, this debate continued all the way through 1990s. I remember when I was working at the Ministry of Education, that it was still a big debate. And interestingly, the OECD is now doing this well-known program for international student assessment, the so-called PISA, that was the first time conducted in the year 2000. So this debate in Finland domestically went on all the way until this first PISA 2000 results were published in December 2001. That surprising everyone in Finland, including myself, ranked Finland as the most successful education system of all in the OECD. And you know, that's that kind of a muted much of this debate when people were able to show that just look at the how our school system can do compared to other systems in the world, that we are basically number one with this system that we started to create exactly 50 years ago. So but it has been a very painful conversation and debate. But you know, those who know Finns, they also know that when we agree on something collectively, that when we decide to do something, then most people will shut up and go and do the work. And that's not what's happening in many other places. Like, you know, I spent 10 years of my life in the United States in different parts, and I often think when I'm part of these debates that are often interesting in the US, but my conclusion often is that these my sisters and brothers in the US, that they're more interested in who is winning the debate in these education debates than, you know, whether we can find a common space, kind of a space and foundation, and then say that, okay, let's shake our hands and let's go and do the work. That in many other places it's all about, you know, winning the debate, winning the argument, and then go home and say that again, I was able to, you know, beat these others. And you know, that doesn't lead anywhere. But the Finns are not like this, that we behave a little bit differently, you know, even compared to Swedes. That Swedes are also, and I know that there may be some Swedish Minnesotans listening to this, but you know, the Swedes are also very different. They want to argue. The Swedes want to kind of talk about things, and they want to talk and make sure that everybody has a kind of a opportunity to say their opinion. But Finns are not like this. We want to talk as well, but at some point we say that enough talk, let's go and, you know, do what we need to do. And that's also behind this this idea that we have been able to do.
And Dr. Sahlberg, I can attest, having served as naval attaché in Helsinki for 2.5 years, working with your Ministry of Defense and whatnot, that when Finns make a decision, they carry out that decision as a group. It's really
absolutely,
it's a great thing to watch.
So learning how to agree, that's the first lesson we can learn as Americans from the Finns. You're listening to Public Policy This Week, and we're your hosts, John Olson and Rich Larson. Our guest today is Dr. Pasi Sahlberg, and we're discussing the reform of the Finnish education system.
Dr. Sahlberg, the story you've told us so far about changing Finland's education system, I mean, it's really, it's fascinating. I've done some research on the Finnish education system to prepare for our discussion today. I was lucky enough to talk to a lot of people in Finland when I was there for 2.5 years, because my dad was a career educator here in Minnesota in the Bloomington public school systems. Can you talk about what it's like today for someone who would like to become a teacher in the Finnish education system? What qualifications do they need to even apply for the position? What's the competitive process like to get hired? And if you are selected, what happens next?
Yeah, thanks, John. You know, this teacher question is a very interesting and important, but it's also often misunderstood when it comes to Finland. That most people kind of argue or conclude that, you know, Finland has been able to do so well internationally in education because of the teachers are so great. And I think it's also important thing, but it's not enough to explain and really understand the performance of the system. But I'm very happy to talk about this teacher thing. I used to be a teacher myself, teaching mathematics and physics in the Finnish schools here and training teachers. So I speak a little bit about those things that you asked me to talk about. You know, the basic idea here is that it's very important that everybody understands. It is that in Finland, teaching is a profession. Mm. So it's a profession based on academic initial education and preparation, akin to medicine or law, in the same way. So the teachers are trained in the same research universities through the similar programs than, you know, all their colleagues and others in the similar level, kind of advanced academic degrees. So this is the kind of a basic thing that we assume that teaching is a profession. It's not a trade. It's a or craft. It's a profession, and that's where you know this whole thinking in Finland starts. How do we what does this profession look like when we're talking about primary school teaching or secondary school teachers or even preschool teachers? So in Finland, John, I think it's extremely important to understand that when we are selecting young people to become teachers in these academic programs in our research universities, and there are no other pathways. Like in the United States, you can become a teacher through Teach for America, different types of fast track things. But in Finland, just like in a medicine and law, that if you want to be a lawyer, a doctor, you need to do certain things in our research universities and earn your credential. It's exactly the same here. So if you want to become a teacher in Finland, it's not enough to be academically smart. It's important to be. It's important that you have a kind of a good and strong knowledge foundation of your, particularly the subject that you teach. But, you know, even primary school teachers, that they need to have like a strong general understanding and knowledge. But unlike in the United States and many other countries where people believe that only if you are a smart high school graduate is enough to make you a good teacher. In Finland, we don't think like this. We think that it's probably a necessary condition, but it's not enough. So all these teachers, if you dream about being a teacher in Finland, you also need to have a kind of a, you have to be able to show that you have a moral purpose that you understand that is driving you to teach, that you have a personality and you know, sometimes we call it a calling, that you need to have this calling to teach. It's not about, you know, 2.5 months summer holidays and good salary that drives you there. You need to be able to explain why you want to teach. And then finally, you know, how teachers are trained, and everybody knows this if you're a young person in Finland, is that when you receive your initial teacher education in these research universities, that you need to do a similar type of clinical training and preparation that medical doctors do in our teaching hospitals. And this is what makes this teaching profession unique in Finland, that we are having this system, just like in medicine, that we are helping students to build the bridge between the theoretical knowledge and practical wisdom to teach through this clinical training system that we have. So that is this is a foundation. And you know, I about my niece, who was, you know, one of those smart, academically really smart girls after high school a few years ago, 15 years ago, her dream was to become a primary school teacher. So he tried to get into this primary school teacher education program here at the University of Helsinki, where there were about 20 applicants for every single study place in a primary school teacher education master's program. So she went there, and after a couple of months after the entrance examination, she called me crying, saying that I couldn't get in. And so I want you to understand why she was not successful as a smart girl, and you know, doing music and sports and, you know, all these things that are required. And the thing was that in the interview, well, you know, in Finland, every single candidate, the student, before they are offered a study place in the university, will be interviewed, just like in a job, that you need to be able to explain this moral purpose and many other things. So they ask, in the panel, they ask her that, why do you want to teach? You know, why not to become a businesswoman or a lawyer or doctor, because you're straight A student, you could do that. And I ask my niece that, so what did you say? And she said that, you know, I didn't think about it. So I said that, you know, my uncle is a teacher. And I said, did you say anything else? I said, yeah. I said that my grandfather is a teacher. And there are a lot of teachers in the family. But, you know, this is a kind of an example that it's not enough to be smart. You know, if you don't have this moral and this purpose, if you don't understand the purpose of what you're going to do, that the universities are sending these kids often only to go to, you know, study law or medicine or business or economics or something like this, because they were not good enough to get into the primary school teacher education. So that is what has been driving this teacher preparation here in Finland to become a very competitive and very high quality adventure.
That is a fascinating aspect of this. We last week on this show, we actually were talking about education. Again, we're talking about funding the K-12 system in Minnesota. And one of the things we got into was how the teaching profession in America can be looked down on. When I was a kid, I used to hear this phrase, those who can't teach. And it's a polar opposite from what we're talking about in Finland. That's fascinating. Anyway, so Dr. Selberg, I need to ask you the hard question here. Whenever we talk about public policy, one of the critical issues that is always going to come up is, what's it going to cost? It sounds to me like Finland just made the decision to spend a great deal on education by changing who would get into teaching, how people would become teachers, by limiting class sizes and other things. From your perspective, as someone who has really studied this issue, can you talk about the cost-benefit analysis of Finland's reforms and how the system functions in modern day? Has the cost to change, in disruption of the old system and paying teachers much more and keeping class sizes small, has it been worth the outcome?
Yeah, no, it's a good, and it is a hard question. The funding is a very difficult. It's difficult to understand and explain in many other places. And certainly, just to give you one idea of the difference between Finland and the United States as a whole, and I understand that there are 50 states and 14,000 school districts in the U.S. So we should not compare these systems too much, but in the U.S., it's very well known that, across the nation, that almost half, probably 40% of your teachers who start their career as a teacher within the first 5 years, they're gone. Mm-hmm. And they go and do something else. Most of them never return back to teaching. But just, if you ask them, how much does it cost to the system to replace those hundreds of thousands of teachers who just leave the school because they don't find it kind of inspiring, or the working conditions are just too much for them. And one thing, if you wanna think about money and make sure that you get the best rate of return to your buck, it's one thing is to try to minimize these losses. And this is, again, I'm gonna give you a Finnish formula of school education funding in three steps that includes this idea, how to do this. And John, you know Finland, and again, there's nothing new to you, because this is a beautiful kind of a minimalistic way and simple way of thinking about how to make things work. The number one is that we try to minimize losses. So we try to make sure that we keep our teachers that we train, that no teacher should leave because they are not happy with the work. Every teacher that leaves, like in the United States, costs a lot of money. That's an extra, it's a waste. Then the other one is the teaching time. I think we need to ask very carefully how much time teachers should be teaching, because every hour that the teachers teach costs money. So you can basically say that the less teachers, less teaching time we need from teachers, the cheaper the system. And then the bureaucracy. In the U.S., the entire $600 billion education budget in the U.S., almost half of that is about the bureaucracy. It's about all kinds of things that have nothing to do with what teachers do or what the kids do in a classroom, and the whole management system. That if you can minimize those losses, like I call losses, the time, the bureaucracy, and management, you can run the system cheaper. It's simple like this. Then the other one is to optimize the teaching and learning time balance. It's interesting if you compare Finland and the United States, teachers teach much more in the U.S., and the kids are spending much more time in the classroom than here in Finland. But still, if we look at the outcomes, the Finnish students outperform most of the American students because of this. So we call this a kind of a less is more thing. So nobody should believe that by teaching kids more, giving them more instruction time will help them to get better outcomes. That just doesn't happen. And Finns understand this very well, that just teaching more, putting more time into this formula, expecting higher outcomes, it just doesn't work. So this is what. And then the third one is, I think, and the final point here is the Finns have been able to design this education system from the children's perspective. Not just for the teachers and adults. And most other education systems are entirely designed from the employment or adults, teachers, or the systems, the politicians, or policy perspective. We also include this children's perspective, like, for example, that are the schools ready? The school readiness is a good point. That in school readiness in Finland means that the school should be ready to educate all kinds of kids, not the other way around, that the kids should be ready for school. That we should have realistic expectations for the kids and teach them to be responsible for their own learning. This is something that's completely different world compared to in Finland and the United States and many other countries. And then finally, the teacher and learner agency, making sure that the teachers and students, that they have a kind of sense of ownership of this education that they do, not just that they are receiving, they're kind of serving the purpose of function or something like this. You know, it's a simple thing like this, that minimize losses and optimize the kind of inputs, the time inputs and outputs, and then design the system so that the kids and teachers and communities would feel more ownership, more agency about these things, would make a big difference in the end.
I'd like to just ask a quick follow-up question on this, if I could, Dr. Solberg. Comparatively speaking, I mean, I'm sure you know what starting salaries are for teachers here in the United States. They're ridiculously low, frankly, coming right out of college, out of undergraduate training with a degree in teaching, and they apply for a job, they get picked up for a school system. Their starting salaries are very low. In Finland, because you have professionalized the teaching system, what kind of starting salaries, comparatively speaking, are we talking about here for teachers in the Finnish system?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, John. You know, in many places in the U.S., the teacher salaries are not enough to make a kind of a decent living. You know, talking about big cities like New York or Boston, mm-hmm. You know, teacher salaries are much higher than the average in the country there, but it's still not enough to make the ends meet. But you know, in Finland, I think it's a tricky question, because we don't want to pay teachers too much so that it would make the system too expensive, but we need to pay them enough not to keep away those kids, young high school graduates who become good teachers. So in Finland, it's the starting salary of teachers in the schools on average is very close to the national average salary of the workforce. It has to be competitive compared to the, you know, what the people would earn and make in a similar, after similar training, the master's level training. So in terms of the amounts, again, we, you know, euro and US dollar is almost the same. So it changes these figures a little bit. But typically a teacher here would earn probably about 50,000 euros, a starting salary or something like this a year, maybe a little bit less, 45,000. But what makes a big difference is that what Finland has done in this salary is that your starting salary can be low and can be considered as probably not enough. But what the salary scale looks like when you progress in your career, if you stay in the profession in teaching for 15 or 18 years, you reach the kind of the highest salary level, and that you know there's a big progress there. So it's a kind of an incentive for you to stay in school. In Australia and many parts of the United States, this is not the case. That the teachers know that, you know, it doesn't matter how long do I stay in the service, that I get a little bit more, but not like significantly enough. So the, you know, my answer to your question is that the Finnish teachers earn very closely what the national average is, but the longer they stay in a profession, the higher kind of pay raises that they can expect. And this has been a kind of a positive incentive here.
And at 50,000 euro, that's very actually comparable to starting salary where we are in Northfield. The starting salary for a public school teacher is $50,000. But I think part of the difference, I need to ask this question, you know, a person who comes out of college at the United States of America these days could carry $125,000, $150,000 in student debt also. That's not the case, though, in Finland, is it, Dr. Solberg?
No, it's not, because we don't have private education or private universities, right? Here. So everything, all the higher education is paid. Students may have their student loans that they need to, you know, pay for housing and living expenses. But typically, you know, even if you have a maximum student loan after studying, you know, be a teacher or medicine, we are talking about very minor, again, you know, something like probably $30,000 or $40,000 in total after 5 years. So it's not, but you know, most students don't have student loan. Again, the government is giving a kind of a subsidies or scholarship for everyone. Automatically, when you start to study at the university, higher education or further studies, the government gives all the students it's probably $700 a month or something like this. So you get it. It's almost like a salary. The thing that you can take with you and pay the thing. So the this public nature of the system makes a big difference in a place like this.
I have one other question, follow-up question, Dr. Solberg. So you mentioned 5 years of education. You've also talked about the professionalization of teaching in Finland. Does this mean that every teacher who steps into a classroom, into a finished classroom, they have already earned a master's degree at a minimum? Is that how your system works?
That's right. Yeah, you're going to teach here in the school system with a master's degree anyway.
Wow.
That's a huge difference.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah. So, Dr. Solberg, economists often talk about the importance of incentives as a driver of human behavior. And the theory goes that if you create the right incentive structures, you'll get the desired end states that you seek in public policy, end states that are optimized. And if you don't get the right incentives, you suboptimize the desired end state. In other words, you get bad outcomes, wasting taxpayer dollars if you don't create the right incentives to drive public policy. You've studied the Finnish system of education for many years now. You were part of it. You led it. You've looked at other nation systems as well. All public policy has trade-offs, right? If we're going to be honest about public policy, we need to look at both the pluses and the minuses of any set of policies. So I'm going to ask you, can you speak to the trade-offs in the Finnish system today? What parts of the system in Finland, the teaching system in Finland, may not be working as well as they could be working? And what role do incentives play in sub-optimizing any particular aspect of the Finnish education system that is not performing as well as it could or should?
Yeah, this is a very important part of the conversation. Nobody should think that Finland has a perfect system without any issues or challenges. Of course, every system has their own problems, and so do we in Finland. But you know, my comment to this incentive thing, that is very important, John, to be able to understand this and also ask this, you know, what are these incentives like in Finland that are related to the how the system is running. For those who are not familiar with how the Finnish system is organized, it's of course a very different way to design the system than in the United States, for example, that we have very strong kind of a local governance here. The central government has very little to say about what the school should do or how it should be organized, and that the fact that this locally led education structure that is a kind of a participatory in terms of teachers and educators having the leading key role in all the operational things, again unlike in the United States, for example, that the teachers, every single school and teacher design and co-create their own curriculum for the school. So it's not the kind of a state given or district provided thing. Is something that the schools own. They decide, of course, you know, how to teach the curriculum, but they also you know, are responsible for assessing students. Again, unlike in the United States, where the heavy, sometimes heavy standardized testing system is kind of has taken this responsibility away from teachers. That is working against of. It's a kind of a disincentive, if you understand what I'm saying. It's a kind of a making schools and teachers kind of further away from the actual actual work that they do in a school. But you know, in some ways, this Finnish system, you ask about trade-offs, and I try to be honest and open very briefly here. I think one thing that I can see as a minor trade-off here currently in this system is that to me it seems like Finland is trying to win a wrong game in a way that we are. By this I mean that we are still within this kind of a mentality that we were the best country in the world, as I said earlier, in this 2001 PISA, and we have remained one of the highest performing OECD education systems ever since. But that we try to kind of run and design and think about the future of education with this in mind, that we want to continue to be the best. We want to kind of maintain this poster child situation. I think that it's a huge handicap, because we can be best and good right now, or we were 20 years ago, but it doesn't mean that our education system would be able to, be the best system for the kids. And that's what matters. It should be the best education system for these future children, you know, my kids and everybody else's. Then the other one, the other handicap is exactly the same as you have in your state and across the United States, is, you know, how much the technology and use of technology has changed children and the children's you know, minds and brains, and but also their behaviors. And this is something that we can see here in the Finnish system, that it's a, you know, the kids are not what they used to be, and they often come to school distracted, disturbed, with the, all kinds of mental health issues, often linked to the heavy use of technology. And this is something that I think the Finnish system has not really taken seriously yet. That we don't kind of if I put it bluntly, that we don't kind of understand the magnitude of the issue here. And then finally, I think the system here is great. The education system continues to be great, but our schools need to do much more to, you know, keep engaging kids better in what they do. So we still, and I was looking at, you know, visiting schools this week here, and I can see this myself, that the schools are not, to me, that they're not thinking enough about, you know, how to really engage kids and how to, you know, offer the children and students a kind of a co-ownership and co-leadership in school. And that's something we need to do much more work there.
Folks, you are listening to Public Policy This Week, and we're your hosts, John Olson and Rich Larson. Our guest today is Dr. Pasi Sahlberg. We're discussing the reform of the Finnish education system. Dr. Sahlberg, we're going to shift to a bit of a different topic now, as long as we've got you here on the show. We know that you're working on some new issues that now regarding teaching styles, and actually I think you were probably just starting to get to this a little bit, looking at style and strategies. This is academically known as teaching pedagogy, the science of how to teach. Traditionally, we've seen most teaching be teacher-guided, in that teachers decide what to teach, when to teach, and how to teach it. Math, for instance. Teachers would decide how to teach the subject, and what pace, what topics. Teachers would assess each student's understanding of an aspect of math education and alter their engagement with that student to improve his or her learning. But there is some debate about the importance of student-led inquiry and the benefits to students in pursuing their own interests under the guidance of a qualified teacher. In the case of math, a student would guide his or herself in studying math, and the teacher would step in to assist or take time to assess whether a student is mastering the subject. Can you talk a bit about this debate between student-led inquiry and teacher-guided instruction?
Yeah, I think this is a, you know, this has been a debate here in Finland and in Australia, and we need to, you know, my first comment here is that we need to be quite careful with these concepts of student-led inquiry and teacher-guided instruction, or sometimes, you know, the debate is about the teacher-led or student-led instruction or teaching. And, you know, for me, when I think about this, and I'm very happy to, you know, talk about this to the Minnesota audience, because I know that, you know, one aspect of the school development in your state there has been exactly about this, like a school teacher-led and student-led schooling and pedagogy and education. That is a very, very kind of a positive and interesting development over there. But the key point for me in the student-led processes of pedagogy or education is that the whole assumption is that the kids learn the best when they are intrinsically motivated to do so. We have known this for the last 100 years. There's nothing. There's no rocket science behind this. But then we also need to, in the student-led pedagogy or approach, we need to include this idea that the learning should be self-directed, if I can use this word, meaning that the students are leading, that they're taking the responsibility of their own learning, and then that it's focusing on problem solving or inquiry, as the term says, in a way that that the students are trying to figure out themselves the problems, solve the problems that are meaningful for them. So these are some of the features that come with this student-led idea. Now then, this teacher-guided thing, which is for me it's a positive thing, and we should not kind of undermine the importance of this teacher guidance as part of the pedagogy in the school. It's we often, you guys in the United States, in English you use this term scaffolding, meaning that we are, the teacher's role is to help and support the learners to do exactly this intrinsic motivation, self-directedness, and problem solving, creativity, these things. And then when the kids are able to do this, then we take these scaffolds away, so that the learning takes kind of the lead by itself. We need also coaching and co-learning by the teacher in this process. And then finally, I think we need to avoid these debates that it's either student-led inquiry, or it's a kind of a teacher-led or teacher-guided instruction. I think in a good quality pedagogy, and this is how the Finnish teachers are trained and prepared. You know, these two things, the student-led and teacher-guided, coexist like simultaneously together. They work in concert, and that's the kind of a beauty, and that's also the complexity of high quality teaching and learning when people are able to do that. So what I'm trying to say here is that we need to stay away from these either or debates, which is better and which is not, and try to find really understand the way how this teacher led and student led and teacher guided instruction can coexist and support one another.
It sounds like what you're saying is it's sort of a yin and yang approach.
Exactly.
It's all part of the same whole.
Yeah.
Dr. Solberg, I'm going to put you on the spot now. You have many friends here in the state of Minnesota. You've visited here many times. Hopefully you won't lose any of those friends or even be barred from visiting Minnesota ever again based on your response. The population of Finland is about 5.5 million people. Your nation funds a Navy, an Air Force, an Army, a Border Guard. You staff embassies around the world. And you still have a fantastic education system that produces kids who routinely test best in the world on the PISA, which you mentioned before. Minnesota has 5.6 million people, so we're almost identical in size, but we don't have to fund our own military or foreign ministry. As someone who has studied your own education system in Finland in great depth, and you've studied education systems in other nations around the world, would you advise the state of Minnesota, which it compares almost identically population size with Finland, to adopt the Finnish model? Why or why not? What are the trade-offs here in Minnesota in the idea of embracing a Finnish model for our own education system in our state?
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, you could have added also this 10,000 lakes that you have. You have 100,000 lakes. So it's a similar thing. You know, I often, sometimes in the early years of this, when this Finnish model conversation started to go global, that there were people who were saying that, you know, Finns are doing so well in PISA and school because it's always dark and snow and icy. I mean, there's nothing else to do but, you know, stay indoors and do your mathematics and literacy. And then, you know, I often pointed out to, you know, places like Minnesota and other Nordic countries that you know we cannot use these funny things. But your question whether Minnesota should consider the Finnish model is you know, this is not the first time I hear this. I've been in the state a number of times, and this has been asked me before. I have, you know, the more we have had these conversations, the more careful I have learned to be with this. So my brief answer is yes and no.
Okay.
And you know, yes means that you know we definitely, the Minnesotans should not ignore the Finnish model by saying that, you know, Finland is far away and it's not like America or the even your state. You know, anybody who says that is a kind of a losing a good opportunity to you know, learn about how differently people can do and design education systems around the world. Without trying to see that, you know, what are the elements that that you guys in Minnesota you can borrow or steal from the Finnish system. So I think that there are many things that, you know, could be helpful for the policymakers, for, you know, we're talking public policy here, the policymakers to look at. For example, this assessment thing is that, you know, the why, how can it be that Finnish education system is one of the best performing systems in the world, and they have no standardized testing. That they, you know, they kind of trust teachers to do the test, the assessment of, you know, what the kids, each and every child is learning in the school. The why we couldn't do? Are we doing the right thing in Minnesota when we are relying so much on, you know, these things that we currently have? So, you know, these are the kind of a types of questions that come with the, you know, comparing the current policies and systems in different places. I would say that, you know, Finland has much more to offer anybody, including Minnesota, as a model of the system. We have much less to offer when it comes to how to run individual schools. I would actually argue that there are more interesting schools in your state, you know, schools doing interesting, innovative, future, you know, forward-looking things that we have here in Finland. that we, you know, the beauty of the Finnish system is the system. It's a systemness that I call that is the kind of a stronghold of this Finnish thing. It's not individual schools or even individual principals and teachers. And that's something that, again, we go back to this education policy aspect that we can Minnesota can probably learn much more about the policy and the system architecture and design than Minnesotans can learn about, you know, how to teach effectively in a classroom or how to organize certain things in the school, because those things, you know, your teachers know how to do these things, but your systems, most of the systems in the United States are not kind of a, they're not designed or structured in a way that would allow teachers to lead and do the best they can. So that's why, you know, when I was publishing my Finnish lessons, that was originally published in the end of 2011, 11 years ago. And I came across the same questions you were asking about. Can we kind of more copy the Finnish system and implement it in Minnesota or somewhere else? When my book went to the second edition, and it's published by the Columbia University Teachers College Press, I asked the publisher that would it be possible to have this little yellow sticker in the back cover of the book or even front cover that would say that don't try this at home? And they said the publisher said, yeah, we know, we hear you, what you're saying, but maybe not. But I'm very, very, very clear in the new forward for the second and third edition of these books that I'm actually saying this there, that don't think that you can try a copy or implement the Finnish model in your system there. That use this book and use Finland as a kind of a inspiration for you to think harder and more critically about what you do in your own system, whether the policies that you have there in place are the right ones. Could you improve or even remove some of these public policies that are preventing, you know, keeping teachers in your state and schools to do the right thing or do things better than they can? And that's my advice still for those who are interested in looking at the Finnish model.
Dr. Solberg, I want to ask you about your published works, but I'm going to throw a curveball and go off script for a second. Because I'm very interested in societal stratification, and I have to ask you this question just from your own personal observation. 50 years into this this project, this conversation in Finland, how have you seen this affect Finnish society and even class structure? You've got a couple now generations of students to come through the system. What in your observation, what has changed?
No, I think, yes, it's a great question. I think definitely we have, you know, this understanding among young people that we, you know, this is a nation of social mobility. That is, this is the society, not only education, but, you know, all the other areas is designed in a way that, you know, anybody can become anything. You know, there was somebody ran a story about 10 years ago about Finland and said that if you want to live American dream, go to Finland. because you know this idea that America was built on, that people who came from all around the world to live in the US was driven exactly by this idea that, you know, it's a country of it's a promised land for those who want to make the best out of themselves. But it's not, you know this, and I do, and many others know that it's not for most people. It's just a dream. It's not going to happen. But, you know, it's not a dream in Finland that you can. If I look at our political elites, our prime ministers and presidents and you know, the top politicians or scientists or artists, you know, they're all kinds of people that they come through across different kind of walks of lives and social groups because of the way the system is designed. And, you know, the important thing here is that kids, young people understand this, that they know that, you know, if I want to become something, it's up to me. It's not about that I need to have the right kind of persons or I need to get to the right type of university or school. Everybody can do it, and it's a very important notion as a young Finn is that, you know, this is up to me. That they are they are not dead ends in education, and it's everything is public, everything is paid for you. You don't need to worry about that. So it's up to me what I want to make out of my life. And you know these guys, you know this much better than I do, that this, it doesn't work like this in America. There are many kids who just are not able to do that. Same in Australia, many other places, who are just plucked away from their kind of a life dreams because they happen to be born in a wrong place or wrong time or different.
Right. Really.
So that's a beautiful thing that we have still in this system.
Dr. Solberg, it sounds to me like that investment that Finland made 50 years ago was a true strategic investment in the future of Finland. Changing the Finnish education system has paid off dramatically in Finnish society and for the Finnish economy. Is that roughly a true statement?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, beautifully summarized.
All right. Now we get to talk about your published works. And I stole at least 5 minutes of your time, so feel free to take as much time as you would like, Dr. Solberg, to talk about your most recent books. Because after this conversation, I'm betting our listeners absolutely would like to know what you've been writing about and, you know, where can they get those books? Where can they read these books?
Yeah, thanks. I published most of my works in the United States. So it's easy if you're interested in, you know, taking a read, and I would be, of course, very happy to, you know, hear your comments if you do so. So any major platform in the internet is, you know, holding my books, and you can have them. So the couple of years, 2-3 years ago, I wrote a book called Let the Children Play with my colleague from New York. So it's written by my American American friend, where we kind of put forward an argument that how more play, we let the children play more, that how it can save our schools and help all the kids thrive. It's a beautiful story about the importance of that thing is that has disappeared in many American schools and societies, but it's still very strong part of the Finnish system. The kids are playing, kids are starting school later, they have much more time to play in the school and outside of the school. So read that if you are interested in, you know, learning more and understanding better about this importance of play. Then I wrote last year a book called In Teachers We Trust, how the Finnish way to world-class schools, again with another American friend who's a primary school teacher here in Finland. And we both were kind of tired of answering visitors' questions who came here to see our schools, the Finnish schools, and they all said, before they went home, many of them, by the way, from the United States, and said, "Oh, now I understand what you know. What's the kind of a secret of the Finnish system is that you guys, you trust your teachers. But what does it look like? You know, this was like, what does it look like?" and nobody could answer this. That, you know, what? But it just feels like, you know, the teachers and principals are trusted much more as professionals as they are in the States and many other places. So we wrote this book for those who want to really understand more about what trust in education school is and what does it look like in Finland. And then finally, I have my third edition of Finnish Lessons that was mentioned earlier, also came out last year. That is my probably the last edition of this series of stories. And it's a book-long story about these things that I've been talking about here, including this critical, like a COVID or post-COVID conversation about how the Finnish system was able to cope and deal with this very difficult, continues to deal with this difficult disruption that we have had over there. Then I run blogs or publish stuff on my website that is easy to find. There's, as far as I'm aware, there's only one person with exactly my name. If there's somebody in Minnesota with exactly my name, give me a call. And just go and put in any search engine my name, and it takes you to my website, and there's more stuff. And as I said, I'm very happy to, you know, have a chat if you have something to tell me. It's just please do so.
Unfortunately, we've sort of reached the end of our show today. Dr. Pasi Solberg, Professor of Education at Southern Cross University in New South Wales, Australia, thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you enjoy the remainder of your time in Finland. I guess you're getting on a plane tomorrow to head back to Australia. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me in your show. And again, greetings to all the Minnesotans there. Keep on doing well and good job there.
Well, folks, that is unfortunately going to close this week's edition of Public Policy This Week. We are on KYMN Radio, AM 1080 and FM 95.1 every Friday morning at 10 a.m. We are your hosts, John Olson and Rich Larson. We've been talking today with Dr. Pasi Solberg of the great Finnish educator. Please tell your family and friends about this show. Remember, it is our hope that this show will get us back to having meaningful, in-depth, and civil conversations about public policy challenges, the challenges that we all share together as Minnesotans and as Americans and, as Dr. Solberg has observed, citizens of the world.
We want people to be armed with facts and data, to hear from policy experts, and for you to be able to use information from our shows to decide where you stand on these highly complex public policy issues.
We'll have more shows on education in the future, but tune in next Friday morning at 10 a.m. for our next show, when we'll cover marine fisheries. Thank you for joining us today. We hope you'll join our show again next Friday at 10 a.m.
You can find the recording of this show on our website, www.kymn.net, or on your favorite podcast service under Public Policy This Week. Have a fantastic Friday afternoon and a superb weekend. Take care, everyone.
You've been listening to Public Policy This Week. Tune in every Friday morning at 10 a.m. for more conversation with policy experts. Remember, this show can be found on your favorite podcast platform or stream it from kymnradio.net.